Good evening. Thank you for being here. We are here today to talk about playing during development. We will do this and use as an example our own online game, the Star Wars Combine. We will tell you a little about our game, why we play it during development, what the advantages are, what the disadvantages are, and especially what are the pitfalls and how you can evade them. Okay, let me start. So first, we want to tell you a little bit about our game, the Star Wars Combine. The Star Wars Combine is a free, massively multiplayer online role-playing simulation game based on the Star Wars universe, having been developed by amateurs during their spare time. So, most important, it's completely a free project done by volunteers. We are not a commercial project. This is important for our presentation insofar as the conditions which we have to work with are slightly different from a commercial project. But it's also the main reason why we decided to allow playing during development. So our decision-making process in this question was determined by other factors than in a commercial project. The Combine has been founded in October 1998, so we are running now for the seventh year. It has at the moment about 2,000 active players and about 100 staff members working in various teams. Like, there is an implementation team, that's the people who actually code the game. We have a rules team who's working on the rules, like the game should be played. We have a technical support team who's offering help to players, all that. We have people who are doing public relations. We are now using our third generation of client and game engine. I will give you a short overview over the various clients we used in the history of the Combine. So this is also something that is probably unusual. It has been one game, one universe we play in, even if we changed software in between. You can see there our web address, www.swcombine.com. This is the first client we used, the Combine Commander. It was released when the Combine was starting in 1998. It was programmed in Java, so it was running on multiple platforms, on Apple Macintosh, on Windows computers. I think Linux wasn't popular back then, which was a big advantage. Everyone could play it. It already had many basic features, like you could join the game, you could create a character, and you could own some assets like ships. And especially in the game, you can form groups of players. We call them factions. A government would be a faction, or a production group that is building ships would be a faction, or a medical group would be a faction. And the Combine Commander already had many tools to administrate those factions. Like, you could join one, you could see the member list, all this. Then we changed to ICIS, or ISIS, as some say. It was done in Visual Basic first, and then we also did a version in Real Basic, because Visual Basic is Windows computers only, and Real Basic would run on Macintosh. What you see is a screenshot from the Windows version. You see it's more graphically oriented than Combine Commander. You could do mostly the same thing. What you see here is a travel screen, like you could go from one end of the galaxy to the other, move in a system and all that. The biggest problem with this client was that at a certain point, the programmer left the team. And there was no one who was able to step in. So we had to go to another solution. We decided to go for, my mistake. I missed the screenshot. This is the Holocom. It was used in parallel with the ICIS, and it's interesting that I forgot about it. So we actually didn't even have one client. We had two clients in parallel. Why? Because some functions were in ICIS, and someone else in parallel coded a second client in Java. So if you would want to fly a ship, you would have to use ICIS, and if you want to build a building, you would have to go to Holocom. It worked, but it was not perfect, of course not. So there was also the idea that we wanted to have one client for all functions. This came with darkness. Darkness is our code name, so to speak, for our new website and our new game engine. So it's website and game engine in one. It's now based on a MySQL database and uses PHP to dynamically create the websites. And this way you can play with every browser on every computer that is connected to the internet. Mm-hmm. We released it in December 2004, and this is what we still use today. And as you can see, it is a lot of text, of course. It's still a web-based game, but we try to make it look nice. You see a screenshot of from a cockpit. This is a ship going down into a city. So why did we decide to allow playing during development? I think it's a very unusual decision, but we didn't have a choice. We never had, because the Combine is created by the players. The Combine was resurrected from the ashes of another online game. There was already a Star Wars online game called the Star Wars Simulation, and at a certain point, all administrators just left. But there were the players. They had a game. They loved this game. They had characters. They had played these characters for years, and they wanted to continue playing. So they decided that they will do something and bring the game back. This is how the Star Wars Combine was created. So closing it down and not allowing the players to play was never an option, because it was the players who created the game. This was turned into a principle, because even now we recruit our staff from the players. If you want to work for the Combine, you have to play it first. These days, sometimes people come up and say, oh, you have a cool game, can I work for you? And we say, well, only if you play first, because we want you to know the game from the inside before you start working on it. Then, as I said, the Combine is a volunteer project, and many things are different if you're working with volunteers. In general, it slows things down and makes it very difficult to plan ahead. First, you will never know what team you will be working with in a week or in a year. Everyone may suddenly leave. You cannot even know how many hours someone will be able to put into the game next week. Like, something may come up in his real life. He may have to work on something for school, for work, or everyone may drop out for one or the other reason, like getting married. It happens. So you never know if your most important programmer is still around in a week. And so planning ahead, like you say, we want to release this in 2 years, it's almost impossible. Then for a volunteer project, dedication is the most important thing that a programmer brings to the team. And sometimes dedication, for us, is more important than qualification. But this means that we have people in the team which join the team with very basic knowledge of the actual coding and who had never worked on a big project like this. It's really a difference if you code a nice little web page, a nice little database, or if you have a huge project like this. And so we have to put a lot of time into training these people. This is also slowing the whole process down. Then you cannot pay people to keep them motivated. And you cannot make any demands like, I paid you for 8 hours a day, you have to do 8 hours a day. You don't pay the people, it's their free time, they give it for free, or they may not give it. You can also not threaten to fire them. Well, you can do, but if you do, you have one programmer less. So unless someone is destroying something, you will not fire him, period. So, the last thing is, playing during development is also paying our bills. There are literal bills. We have to pay for the server, the hardware. We pay not that much, but a little bit on software, like tools or, mostly all kind of tools, software tools. And for a big game with 2,000 players, server costs are not something someone can pay on his own from pocket money. So the game is financed by donations from the players. So if there are no players, there are no donations, we have no hardware, we cannot code. But there are also other kind of bills. Why should the developers do this if they do not get something back? If you give work and time for free, you want to get something back. And in our case, the most important thing that the developers, the programmers can get back is the fun in playing the game. The other thing they can get, the other thing they can get is the good feeling of having achieved something. They will release a new feature and they will get positive feedback from the players. They will see how their work is used, how it is bringing fun to people. So these kinds of payment are the only way we can really pay our programmers. Also another reason why we have to play during development. So not doing it was never a choice. This also means that we can take a rather impartial look at it, because we're not prejudiced if it's good or bad. We did not ask ourselves in the beginning if it's good or bad. We had to do it. So now we can take a look if it's rather good or if it's rather bad. And we will do it like this. I will take a look at it from the developer's point of view. I'm the developer. And here with me is Walker, who is a player for how many years?
6 years now.
6 years now. And he will tell you a little bit on the player's point of view on this. So, good is that you get immediate feedback. You could even rephrase it and say, our players are our testers. Testing is an important part, and actually we use our players as guinea pigs. Sometimes the feedback, it's not just testing, it's also, as I said, some kind of payment. People will like your game and this is good for your motivation. Then the technology evolves and your game will have to evolve with it. Last year on this Electronic Frontiers Forum, there was a very, very good panel on commercial MMORPGs. And I attended the panel and there was a question, how long does it take to develop such a game? And there were several professional developers and they said 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. Now think back, 6 years back, 1999. Think about computers and the internet back then. The technologies we rely on today, like PHP, MySQL, they didn't even exist, or they were hardly available, or they were very expensive. Or what I was showing to you, the screenshot of a cockpit with lots of graphics. Hardly anyone had a good enough internet connection to download this for every game session 6 years ago. So, the game we can bring to our players now would not have been possible even to dream up for a zero-budget project like ours 6 years ago. So we can do it step by step. We can evolve with technology. When new technologies arrive, we can use them to make our game better, more interesting, more graphical, nicer. I misplaced this slide. There it is. It creates a sense of achievement with the developers. They feel good about their work. And this is something that is more difficult if they don't get the immediate feedback, if they can't see their work used. Now we come to what is bad about it. Most important, there is something always buggy. If you release a new feature, there are bugs in it, and you will need time to get them out. We have a bug tracker. Everyone can report bugs, and it's always full. Of course it is. Because when you have fixed all bugs, you can move on to the next feature, and the next feature will have bugs in it. Mm-hmm. Then the game will always be incomplete. We are often asked, when will the game be complete? And these days I say never, because if we make now a list what we want to put in, and if we finished putting in everything that we put on this list, until then we would have found 10 other things that we would like to see in it as well. So the game is always incomplete. Now some features are more important than others. You can always find new nice-to-have features, and at the same time there are essential features. Maybe there will be a time where we can say we have all the essential features. But then we will still want to add nice-to-have features. Bad, and I think Walker will talk more about this from the player's point of view, there's always a double standard. Double standard as in one thing is what really exists, and the other thing is where you want to go to. Like, we have a page with rules, and If you're a player, you have to be very careful when you read our rules, because half of them is what is actually coded, and the other half is where we already know what we want to have in, but it's not in yet. And this is very confusing for new players. They really have to understand how this development process works, so we are really relying on intelligent and patient players who are willing to understand this. And it's a little bit of a problem. Okay, then, not all aspects of the game may be developed with the same speed. This has different reasons. The most important one is not all developers will work with the same speed. For example, I said it's a volunteer project. One developer will be able to put in 5 hours a week. The other one will put in 5 hours a day. You can try to balance this by assigning a small project to the programmer with 5 hours a week and a big project to the programmer with 5 hours a day. But maybe the guy with 5 hours a week is a better programmer. So maybe only he can do the more complicated stuff. And this is why certain features will evolve faster than others. And this is a problem because some features are very much desired in our game and are progressing slow. Okay. Now I will give over to Walker, and he can talk about his perspective, the perspective of a player.
Oh, my name is Walker Schlunt, and I am a player here in the Combine. I'm going to give a brief outlook and a brief discussion about what a player experiences in developing game. Because a lot of the times, because of games like this, we don't develop. We create a game, we give out the game, and it's basically finished. I mean, nobody plays, you know, Forgotten Realms, the original version, and it not be completely. You get to the end and it's done. Well, the Combine's an ever-growing game, like she said, and so, you know, developing is a different thing. Brief background. Well, I am a veteran. I've been here for almost 6 years now. I've assisted in multiple different things, including the mining rules, admin scenarios, you know, various different things, all slightly important, but not in the programming sense, because I'm not a programmer. Of course, I've never been killed in character either. That's a great benefit for me. I'm from Montgomery, Alabama. I joined in the early 2000s. In character, I play a wealthy businessman that runs an escort group and actually owns a medical faction. In real life, of course, I'm a senior pre-med student at a university, and as an out-of-character kind of title, I'm an admin scenario director. Okay, so playing an unfinished game. The games are never really finished, like she said. We can never actually say, hey, your game is done, because there's always going to be something new. I mean, if we read a book and say, hey, well, there's a new race, we're going to say, well, why can't we add that race? And we'll add the race. So it's never going to be finished. Well, the brief introduction to the Combine is like nothing you've ever experienced. There's not a game like it on the market. There's not a game ever going to probably be like it on the market, because it's too odd, if you will. but we're doing something special, because 2,000 people like it, and they keep coming back. And, you know, so somebody likes it, and I enjoy playing, so I'll just talk about it now. Client or not, when I first started, the client was something you downloaded, and it had all the images of all the ships and all the traveling, and that was all taken care of in the client. But because of the client, it cuts down, you know, on the resources. The resources that the server actually had to give out, because of all the images having already on your computer, all it would have to do is send you information to show you this image at this time. Now, the website gave it the ability to go access anywhere. I went overseas, I was in Spain, and I accessed my Combine account. It was great. But you can't do that if you have you have to download something every time. This is a controversial issue that everybody can disagree or agree with me on, but admins are biased. regardless of what they tell you. For a game to run smoothly, the admins, they have to be biased because they can see in the future kind of what they want, you know, yeah, okay. They can see into the future where they want the game to go. And what, you know, players want to say, well, you're giving the Empire a little bit too much. You're giving, you know, the Rebel Alliance a little too much. Well, they have to balance the game. Otherwise, the game kind of dissolves itself. And without balance, games tend to kind of go into that place that they don't ever come out of. So they have to keep the game running at any means necessary. And that does mean any means necessary. Inflation is a major issue when you're dealing with a developing game, as you've probably seen with just about every game. I don't know what to really say. Inflation affects everything. I mean, gas prices. But short of removing credits and actual assets in the game, there's not much you can really do about it. But as the development continues, more features are released, so that overall the credits or the money or the whatever you're using for your game slowly kind of distributes across everything, because, you know, even the wealthy businessman has to buy himself a new ship. Or the ship people need to, you know, buy materials. So overall, after, you know, as the game progresses, the credits kind of spread themselves out, if you will. The golden rule is something that's always been something I like and then I don't. It basically is a created rule that's a fail-safe method allowing the admins to revoke the abuse of a rule. The golden rule states, and I don't have it here, but it basically says the rule should be used in the way it is written to be used. No exploiting a rule because you kind of found a loophole to go around. So basically, this is a way the admins can use to keep us players kind of in check. Because, you know, the Combine, because there's a slightly... I mean, you can exploit any game. And the golden rule makes it so that it continues to be fair for everybody, because somebody might not have thought to use the exploit, or they might, you know, it might create 3 billion credits that just suddenly happen to show up in the game, and that wasn't meant to be used that way. It was meant to be, you know, actually used as a deterrent, if you will. anyway, communication is very important in the development of game, and along with that, keeping the community kind of connected. We use an IRC chat room, of course, and we use I use AIM and MSN and ICQ and all those, you know, major messenger systems, because it allows me to communicate. Because, well, I'm a faction leader, it allows me to communicate with my members and keep them, you know, chatting about what's going on and, you know, sending them this direction or that direction. But it keeps people kind of active. As long as somebody's bugging them and saying, well, hey, you know, did you move this, did you move to Alderaan, or did you move, you know, the ships to Yavin? Then they're like, well, okay, I'll go move the ships to Yavin. But suddenly, if the communication stops between anybody, nobody knows what's going on, and the game dissolves itself yet again. Keeping active, this is kind of a problem we run into in a lot of games when you're developing, is because when you're developing, not all features are complete. And that's a problem, because activity stems from what's kind of created. I've had multiple people ask me, well, is this feature finished? Well, and I have to say, well, no, but it's still fun to do what's out there so far. But people will say, well, tell me when this is finished and I'll come back. And that's just not what we're looking at, because, you know, regardless of whether or not you're doing exactly what you want to do, your input actually affects how the game progresses in general. I mean, even if you're set up to be a bounty hunter and you want to be out shooting people with your, you know, your fire spray, even though you're not doing that right now, your input into how, you know, ship combat would work or should work is very important to the later programmers, because they need to know, you know, hey, well, we read it in canon, let's see what we can do. That's where the rules team comes in, and it helps. I'm part of the rules teams also. It allows us to kind of put together ideas and equations so the programmers can look at them and kind of put them into the database. Let's see here. This is something, again, that's really important. Out of character is never easy to leave out of character. You just can't do it. I mean, I'm talking about my game, and I just told you in character stuff about my character, even though we're in a forum. It's, you know, but the way we've used that, we've put it to a benefit to our game, because people do talk about it. But in a lot of ways, some people will say, well, hey, you can't use that information out of character because you got it out of character and in character because you, vice versa. But we've used it by talking about the game in a lot of ways. We've almost to put it this way, we've almost become our characters. So if I'm sitting here chatting with, you know, Drayton here, and she's the admiral of the Imperial Fleet, well, you know, I can chat with her about diplomatic things I'd like to see my faction do with the Empire. Or I'd like to, you know, see, hey, well, I heard there's some rebels, you know, amassing near Sullust. Would you guys like to go take a look at it? You know, I mean, we're going to talk about it. That's just not natural. But it allows us to kind of not be affected too heavily by it. Now, of course, there's also the threat, you know, people saying, well, I don't like you in character. Or out of character. Either way, I don't like you, so I'm going to use an out of character way of, well, let's say I'm gonna get you banned for, you know, something. Now that's, of course, that's gonna be in any game. You know, somebody can always start bad mouthing somebody, and you know it's gonna affect everything. So, but that's gotta be that's an admin thing to watch out for. And they've done a great job with it. We've never had a major problem with that at all. Do I need to ask questions yet, or would you like to go back to yours?
No. We go back to my part now. You can ask questions in the end, and we will be very happy to answer all of them. But first, we have the part about pitfalls.
Yeah. There you go.
The part about pitfalls, you can be sure that we know so much about them because we, at one point or the other, we had been in every single one of them. And I'm sure we didn't find all of them yet. So the first important thing is you have to keep things compatible. This is upwards compatible and downwards compatible. If you're playing during development, you will add new features, or sometimes you will have to change features. Downwards compatibility in this case means that if you introduce a new feature, it should not punish players for what they did so far. For example, at a certain point, it was necessary to change the tax calculation. Governments will get taxes depending on the buildings they own. So the tax rules were changed, and the situation was that governments who so far took a very careful look at the tax equations to optimize the building on their planets to get the maximum taxes suddenly found out that the buildings they had were actually ruining their taxes, bringing them down. And something like this is not fair for players. You have to try to avoid it, and if you can't do it, you will have to put extra time into making a transition. Like saying, okay, we will change the rules, you have a month to change your buildings. Or we will change a certain percentage of your buildings for you by hand, which is always also taking up manpower in the administration team. So if you can avoid it, even the better. Second, the way to avoid it is something like upwards compatibility. Try to know now what will be added in 2 years. This is difficult because I wish we could see into the future, but we can't. So it will happen that we have to change plans, but the better we know what we want to put in later, the better we can code now to avoid problems like this. So we have to use this, what I call double standard, what is and what we want to have in a year, 2 years, 3 years. You also have to be aware of interdependencies. You have to understand how different features interact with each other. Some features rely on each other. For example, I need to have mining to produce raw materials to build buildings. Other features will balance each other. Inflation was a good example. If you have a feature that puts money into the system, like taxes, you need another feature that will get money out of the system, be it maintenance or war or whatever. Actually, inflation has been a big problem for a long time because we had features that would put money into the system and too little features. We still have too little features that take money out of the system. This is a little connected to the problem of balance. If features of only one side, so to speak, are developed fast and the balance is missing, you can only do this for a certain time. You don't have to do everything synchronized all of the time. If it's out of sync for a month, no problem. If it's out of sync For half a year, maybe it's a problem. If it's out of sync for 3 years, you have a big problem. One of the things you may want to do to solve this problem is introduce provisional solutions. For example, you have a feature to put money in. You don't have a feature to take money out. You may try to put something in to get money out fast, even if it's not really a feature you need, just to get money out. The biggest problem with this is there's nothing as long-lasting as a provisional solution, because even people may forget that it was intended to be provisional. They may simply forget to take it out. We always had this. Why do you want to take it out? And then you have to come and say, wait, it was meant as a provisional solution? And people will no longer remember. Or the people who are gaining from it will not want it to go away. So try to avoid it if possible. And if you have to put it in, it's important that you keep in mind that it was meant to be provisional. Take it out again as soon as possible. Then another factor that is usually overlooked is that you will become slower. With every feature that you release, you will have to put more time into code maintenance, and you will have less time to put into creating new code. So if you make a long-term projection, like we will do this year and that next year, and in 2 years we want to be there, you tend to underestimate that with the release of a feature, you become slower and slower and slower. Every new feature makes it harder to add new features, which is also not that good because it will give players a feeling that nothing is happening. In the beginning, you will release many features very fast, and then it will become slower and slower. And this is not good for the motivation of the team and for the players. But there is not really a way to avoid this. Really, I couldn't. Just knowing it in advance does help. Then, this is the flip side of immediate feedback. You will get feedback from your players. They will tell you if they like things or if they don't like things, and they will tell you what they want. And the problem is that you will easily try to get their applause. Everyone wants to be liked. And so you will tend to give them what they want. But what they want may not be what the game needs. It's not just that sometimes the administration may be able to see something that players do not. It's more that players have a point of view. They want what is best for their character or their group. Like pirates will have a different idea what needs to be done than a production group, than a government. Does this mean you should not listen to your players? Of course not. You should listen to your players. But you should keep an eye on what is also good for the game. And you sometimes have to find a way to convince players that what you want is good for the game and that it's also good for them. One result of this is that you can easily get distracted. You will find yourself adding the 500th something nice to have feature because people will want it. We get feature requests all the time. Wouldn't it be nice to have a button that I can do this and that and that? And yeah, it's nice to add this. Sometimes you should do something just to make your players happy. But it will, in the end, cost time. It will slow things down. So it's important to not do it too often and not too much. There are some simple things you should do. You should ask yourself, do we really need this feature? Is it essential? Or is it just nice to have? Then there is another pitfall, especially for developers. Is this new technology? It's a flip side of what I said. If you play during development, you can use new technologies. Developers tend to love new technologies. They would want the new toy. Everyone wants the new toy. And they will jump onto it and try to implement it. But this will always be a setback insofar as everyone in the team has to learn to work with new technology. And also, it's not always clear if it really gives an extra, a bonus, something real to the game. Sometimes it's just a toy for the developers. So if there is a temptation from the side of the players who want nicer features, there is also a temptation from the developers who want nicer toys. Then the biggest question is, do I still know what my primary goal is for this month, this quarter, this year? And I could even have added for this week. Because in the day-to-day business, you will get a request from a player, someone will talk to you on IRC, you will read on a message board a nice idea, and you will get lost in it. You just get stuck in the day-to-day business. And after 4 weeks, you will wake up and think, wait a minute, I didn't do anything of the things I wanted to do this week. I didn't do anything I have on my schedule for this week. This is very important. It's also important sometimes to ask, do we all on the team still know what we as a team want? And even, does the team have a common understanding of what we want to put in this year, this quarter? One way to avoid this is you have to monitor progress and make it visible to the players and to the other developers and programmers. So you have to establish ways to communicate with the players. Like I said, for example, we have a bug tracker where everyone can report bugs, or we have message boards where everyone can make suggestions. And of course, people can talk to us. But you also have to find more institutionalized ways to do it, like, for example, a bug tracker. Then it's important to, on the one hand, add small features. This is nice to have button so that people will see there is constant progress. There is something done on the game all the time. But at the same time, it's important that you create milestones, the bigger goals, the things you don't want to accomplish this week, but this year. And it's important that the team and the players know what will be the next milestone. Like, we want to have production out. We want to have combat out. Things like that. And these goals and progress markers must be available to the game community and to the programmers. It must be up on the website somewhere, and there must be regular updates. It's not important if it's a daily update or a weekly update or a monthly update, but they have to be regular. And everyone has to know where he can find out where the game is standing. And this last point, community is as important as coding. It's a consequence of everything I said. If the players are our main resource, we recruit from the players, we get donation from the players, we get feedback from the players, then the community is all essential. Especially we are depending on people who are playing, who are having fun, who are happy in this game. And we may be able to make it a better gaming experience by adding a new feature, but we should never overlook that their happiness, their feeling good, is more depending on the community than on any game feature. This is important to not lose sight of the community, and it's also important to code tools that will help the community, like message boards, like, for example, we have our own IRC server. So building the community is an important goal for the implementation team, for the developer teams in itself, simply because we need the players. Okay, I want to thank you for being here, and now you can ask questions. Yes?
One of the things you were talking about, implementing new portions, like, you know, if you were implementing combat or something like that.
Thanks. When you're going about doing those implementations, do you take more time, like you were saying, there's the commerce portion of it right now, something like that, and do more of the smoothing of edges of some of the existing pieces first before you go to add a large piece later on? Or is it, what sort of a pattern do you have for when you're adding that?
I'm not sure if you have a real pattern, especially not every developer or programmer on the team has the same pattern. One likes to smooth the edges and one likes to add new features. No, there's no distinctive pattern that we all follow, I would say.
But as a team goal, like you were saying before, is there anything of that sort? You were saying that as the team, where you want to be in certain, like,
Yes. We usually, for 2 years now, we are doing something like a yearly schedule. Mm-hmm. We put together primary goals and secondary goals. And this year, we also put them on the website so that everyone can have a look. And at certain times, sometimes we go back, take a look at them, and take a look, what did we achieve, what did we not achieve? The difficulty is that we cannot do that much. We don't achieve them. We can just think, oh, it didn't work. Sometimes you can say, why did it not work? But sometimes it's really a factor we cannot change. Yeah, we do this.
Okay, cool.
With so many different people doing the coding, do you have a QA group that kind of looks over the code being done to make sure that it's integrating well with, you know, between the coders, and do you have a test platform so that, you know, when a new rev comes out for a module, it can be put out there to ensure that there's nothing game-breaking before it hits the live server?
We should have it, but we don't. I think this has to do with our zero-budget volunteer thing. It's also, of course, we do something to do quality assurance, but mainly it's like if someone wants to join the game, we will try to pair new programmers up with senior programmers, and the senior programmer will do some supervision. But it depends a little bit on the senior programmer, how careful he is and how good he does it. It is a problem. We have too little time, I have to say this, to ensure that standards are used in a similar way by different programmers. So it depends really a little who coded a feature. And basically, people learn as they go. Like, we will give them a small feature first, something where they can't break the game, something that is not essential, something that is nice to have. And if they leave in the middle of it, so what? And then we will give them something that is somewhat important, but not able to break the game if possible. And if they're still around then they make get a really, really big important feature. By the way, breaking the game is very easy. Yeah, of course, you have to leave out one semicolon and everything. And it happens from time to time. This is another reason why we are really depending on a very tolerant player community. They no longer panic if they try to log in and all they get is an error message. When we first released it as a web-based game, they would panic. We would have 10, 20 bug reports. Now they know, okay, someone was working on it. I'll try again in half an hour. So we are working on a running environment, and this is risky, but everyone knows. The programmer knows after a while, and the players know it all the time. I think it's a process every programmer has to go through. Every programmer has to mess something up when he's new. I think everyone on the team did this at one point. Replace the all-important index file, or delete the semicolon. And I have a real-life story. I was coding something, really a minor thing, and then the telephone rang. As I said, we're not on an office building. We're all volunteers, so I'm doing this at home. My telephone rang. And then the phone call was over, and my husband talked to me, and I was back at the computer 2 hours later only to find out that I uploaded a feature with a very, very small bug, but it was in the login process. So the game was down for 2 hours. Mm. I was feeling horrible. But I think every programmer has to do this once or twice. It's a good lesson to learn. You will never, ever upload anything without testing it, no matter if your husband gets angry, if you don't catch your telephone call, if you don't catch your train, you will just check it. Okay, next question.
I wanted to ask you about the, now that you've moved to more of a graphical interface on your game, how do you handle the art direction? It's sort of like one person would handle how the look of the game would be, and but you have multiple programmers, and how do you maintain the integrity there?
First about art, we have an art team, several people who are doing graphics. basically. And every programmer who wants something graphically done can go to the art team, make a posting there and say, look, I need this and that. Can you make me a button? Can you make me a nice screen? It depends a little on the programmer. How should I say this? The framework in general and the style sheet is set up. So this is not what an individual programmer can decide. But like, do I use a form or do I use a link and put it, do I put it on the top or on the bottom? This is, in the end, it's up to the individual programmer. And also, it's clear that different features need a different level of graphics. Example, you have seen the cockpit, it looks nice. On the other hand, if I have a feature that displays a member list of a faction, what do you want to make nice about a member list? A member list is the member list. It's just text. And there's no reason to add graphics to it. But to ask this question, it's there's a team just for the artwork.
How balanced is the game for newer players and older players, and how do you go about like testing if it's balanced for the older and newer players?
Well, I guess I can take that one because that does play more with the characters and the players themselves. And when you first join the game, this is something we're going to talk about a little bit later on. We've got another forum coming up. But when you first join the game, you of course are new to the galaxy. You have no idea what you're doing. You don't know how the features work. You don't know anything. You're a newbie. What can we say? But basically, when you first join the game, and do I need to move that up or like that? So I talk into it. Okay. All right. Well, when you first join the game, most likely you'll want to join a faction. You'll have decided, well, my character wants to be a smuggler. So he'll join one of the smuggling factions. And then from there, your smuggling buddies who are leading your faction will, teach you, well, okay, when you want to fly to Alderaan, you type in the following coordinates and you press this button. And then, they'll probably assign you a ship. So when it comes to really balancing, it's really all about the same. We're all kind of on the same level. Even the characters that are, 25, level 25, or the Jedis and the Sith, we're all flying the same ships. So, when it really comes down to it, we're all kind of on an equal level. You got anything to say?
Yeah, I want to add, I think you're referring to the problem known as power gaming. People who log in for a week and push their character to level 60 and kill everyone around them. This is not possible in our game, not just because killing is mostly not around yet. We don't have fully implemented combat, but especially because the whole game is player-driven. Everything that is somewhat important is done by players. Even the Emperor is a player. So. Also, all the ships have to be moved by players. All the buildings have to be built by players. So the level zero newbie is still very, very, very valuable to his group because someone has to move the materials, the ships, build the buildings. A level zero newbie is almost as important as a veteran because a veteran can only play as much as a newbie.
Yeah, I was wondering, based on the nature of how the game is always under a lot of development and the size of your player base, how is the community, the players, a bit more understanding, how do they differ than, say, your other typical commercial online role-playing games for like World of Warcraft, where they have to deal with the .NET kiddies and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Do you find that the community is more understanding of those sorts of problems?
The community overall has realized that our game is in development. That's one of the major features. I mean, basically, there's a lot of these, and I don't know if it shows up in many of our presentations, at least this time, there's a lot of the soon with a trademark next to it. I mean, it's coming soon because our game is in development, but the players overall have found ways to kind of keep themselves interested. Like a lot of on our IRC channels, we'll have four or five rooms with 30 players in them role playing in a bar, or one will be in the IC the in character medical ward, and of course I play a doctor too, but it takes all kinds, and some of the guys in the bar will, you know, get in a bar fight, and then they'll end up in the medical ward. And, you know, but the community is all there, and we're all building our characters. So that's one thing, a lot of difference that doesn't show up in really the presentations, is the fact that our game is kind of a mixture of both the, you know, old school D&D on the table and the new interfaces of the internet. Because, you know, with the online games, it's all about seeing. You can see the world around you. You can, you know, hold your blaster. You can run around. With our game, it's more of a thought-provoking, how should we put it? I mean, you couldn't, if you didn't know how to say it, you couldn't, you know, go and strike the troll the right way. I mean, I hit the troll. Well, yeah, but how do you hit the troll? If you don't, you know, if you don't understand, you don't get anywhere. So basically, our community, I'm kind of going off some small tangent, sorry. But our community understands that we're in development and that we are growing, but that we have to keep ourselves kind of occupied as it goes.
I'm a player, and what happens is each of the factions has their own bulletin board. And so they interact among themselves on a bulletin board in addition to interacting on the game. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways they keep the people occupied, is your faction has a bulletin board where you have these various topics, like we created a bar in one of ours, and you go in there and you have bar fights and that kind of stuff. And that's how I think most of the players love Star Wars, and so as long as the game is based upon Star Wars, I think that gives us an affection for the game that keeps us going there. I've been playing for 4 years, and the development of the player is slow because it's basically you travel in real time. You don't go from point A to point B in 4 hours. Sometimes a trip will take 3 days, three actual days on your ship. So it's a very, you don't go from level 1 to level 25 in a year. Like I said, I've been playing 4 years, and I'm only a level 9 character.
To be completely honest, I think we can't answer the question, because all of us who are sitting here, we're too busy with our own game, we don't play others.
That's, yeah.
Oh. Yes.
Let's get this guy. We'll get the guy.
Well, I've got just kind of a short question. On the average day in your game, how many bar fights do you have?
Well, it really depends on my day. Like, if I come home from, you know, I'm back from the university and I'm tired, and I might actually just go in there and just kind of sit around and have a beer and just relax. And I don't get in a bar fight that day, but the next day, you know, two guys I know happen to get in the bar fight, and, well, you know, I got to patch them both up. I can't, you know, let them bleed to death. But, you know, I mean, it depends on the day. I mean, sometimes there'll be hunting expeditions. We'll just go out there and, you know, we'll be like, well, we're going to hunt ourselves a bantha, Wookiee. A Wookiee, I don't know. You know, we'll just go out there hunting. Well, you know, I always wanted to catch a Yoda. But, you know, the point is, it depends on how, you know, it's as big as your buying can be. If you say, well, my bar is, you know, has blue wallpaper and this, that, and the other, and has, you know, weird white chairs, well, that's fine with me and with anybody that comes in, because you've created your own world. That's another thing that I can mention, is the fact that it's very flexible. In this, you're not structured too well. You can only have these five different pieces of furniture and that wallpaper or that color, you know, seat. I mean, it's where your words go. If you want to say I have a blue velvet robe, well, I have a blue velvet robe. So, you know, bar fights are, well, I don't get them every day. Sorry. That guy.
How informed do you keep your player base of changes?
Sorry?
How informed do you keep your player base of changes? Every time a programmer or developer changes something, updates something, is there like a message board where it's instantly posted and that's like a requirement?
Most important, on the when you log in, the first page that will come up is the news. And on the sim news, there are all kinds of announcements, but mostly about new feature releases.
Okay.
Also stuff like, hi, we are off to Atlanta now. Hi, we're having fun at Atlanta now. All this, but everything that affects the community.
Yeah, I used to be part of a community like that where it was always in development, but it was very hard to get information out of the people who were changing things sometimes.
Yes,
and that was very
sometimes it is difficult. It's not so difficult if a new feature is released, but minor updates, like something has been moved in a menu from this to there. This is sometimes hard to get, because there will not be a big announcement on the news about it.
Hi. I was wondering who owns the content of the game. Would you guys ever be able to take it further than it is now, or?
This is a good question. Last year we did something on copyright issues. I think it goes in this direction. Of course, we have a problem because the main content is Star Wars, and we don't own the rights to use Star Wars. We are tolerated by LucasArts. We are in constant contact with them. They decided to not shut us down. But yeah, they're nice people, really. But we are aware that, for example, this is the other reason why we are a volunteer project. We cannot afford to buy a license. We don't want to become a completely professional project. And so we are not allowed to earn money by it. Simple as that. For the game content, it's another problem. Technically, because we have no legal entity. We, in theory, every programmer would own his code, but let's say I would leave the team. Could I insist that they delete every third line or something? Wouldn't work. So it is a problem, but it's more a legal problem than a problem in reality.
How do you handle collusion between players if they decide, say, a group of players get together, decide to make a drastic change to the universe? It sounds like a very role-play-based type of environment.
Well, when it comes to...
I think this goes into your department.
Oh, okay.
Admins are biased. You said it.
I did. But when it comes into major things, a lot of, like, well, the universe, this is something that we didn't mention. The universe is static. A lot of the multiplayer games as it stands, when you log out, you don't exist. When you log back in, you exist. When you log back out, you don't exist. In our game, you are permanently there. You do not get to disappear. You do not get to suddenly, well, I'm getting ready to get in this battle, so I'm going to log off real quick, so they'll pass me by, and then I'll log back in. It just doesn't work that way. Your character is always alive. So you just have to log out and dream about the real world. But anyway... As when it comes into major collisions, I mean, I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, you can't move planets and
collusions.
I'm sorry.
Collusion.
Like, say, a group of people get together and decide to overthrow the emperor. A faction forms within the empire.
It happens all the time. This is how the empire works. it's the question how much it would go away from Star Wars. Usually, administration tries to not interfere, but. To be honest, for example, if some people would say we have a great idea, we want to start a new group and it's supposed to do whatever, as crazy as you want to be, it's fine with us. We like it. We love it. We will try everything to make it possible, as long as it stays inside Star Wars. If you say it could exist in the Star Wars universe, it's fine. On the other hand, for example, if the Emperor would decide, I no longer want to be an emperor. I will introduce a democracy. I will allow votes. We will remove him very, very fast. We did this. So it has to stay Star Wars. Within these boundaries, you can do whatever you can imagine.
I've actually played only two MMORPGs before. One of them had... They both have a communication system, but in one of them, the communication system wasn't integrated into the game. I mean, what do you do to make the communication system in the game rather than simply an external, like, here's the game and then over here is a separate program?
Well, as it stands, we currently have a feature that anybody that plays it, call it D-mail, because, you know, we have darkness. But within the internal settings of the game, when you log in, you receive a little message that says you have five messages. And you go log on there, and it'll say, well, you've got a message from, you know, Baron Von Dudehead, and you've got a message from, you know, Twi'lek X or whatever. I mean, but it's an internal system along with that external thing. So if I wanted to send an in-character message to the Emperor or the Empire, and I wanted to say, well, I'm interested in possibly, you know, nationalizing one of my factions, would you be interested in at least discussing this? Well, I'd probably send it to the Darkness account, my Darkness mail, because that's more of an in-character thing rather than some of, you know, ICQ kind of, it's kind of on the edge of in-character, out-of-character. So that's how we have the message feature involved there in the game already. So,
but But individual players also, groups like factions all exchange handles on ICQ, and so they also talk and have talks on ICQ, and you can do that while you're in the game.
Yeah, and as I said, we have our own IRC server, so more or less every group has its own channel. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to mention that there is another method of communication, even if it's rarely used. And if two characters are in a room, you can simply speak, and everyone in the room will read it. Or if you're the pilot of a ship, you can send a message to the speakers of the ship, and everyone on board the ship will hear it. Mm-hmm. It's not that much used because most people like to have their own ship and want to be alone on it.
Okay, three minutes.
Okay, I think we can take one more question. Last question.
You've been in development for 6 years and you're talking about 1, 2, 3 year plans. Are you ever going to release this game, going to sell it? Is there an eventual goal? Or are you just going to be developing it forever?
First off, we can't sell this game. As I said, the most important copyrights are with LucasArts. Yeah, we will never be able to sell it.
They wouldn't be interested in purchasing it for release?
No, I don't think so, because they have their own product. They have Star Wars Galaxies. Mm-hmm. It's slightly similar, but at the same time, it's very different. At a certain point, LucasArts wanted us to shut down the Combine for various reasons, infringement of copyright, but also because they were concerned that it would be a competition to Star Wars Galaxies. This was about a year before Galaxies was released. Now think about it. We are a zero-budget volunteer project, and they wanted to shut us down because they considered us competition. Wow, we were proud. Actually, 2,000 active people. These are all people who logged in within the last 7 days. Yeah. We have about 10,000 registered players. So it's not really an option, and it's nothing that we even want. What we could have done is the same situation. We could have said, you could say, we change the names, we change the skins, we will no longer tell it the Star Wars Combine, we will call it the Space Odyssey Combine, and we will call the ships no longer Star Destroyer, but a Star Dismantler. We didn't want this. We want to play Star Wars, yeah, and we want to create our own universe. So we are not commercial, and we will never be. Thank you.